ringing in that.
Well,
welcome to the community meeting hosted by the NRC tonight. We want to go ahead and get started. Thank you all for attending. The Lions Club tells me that they would like to make one announcement before we start our program. Alan?
As chair of the recently held Crab Fest at the Brandemore Church, I'd just like to thank the NRC for supporting us and helping us with the advertising. Thank you, mate.
Okay. We're going to go ahead and get started. Mark Smith and his lovely wife Susan brought cake, and it's in the back. There's coffee, there's tea and cake, so please make yourself at home. And we're going to start the program with Buddy Whitfield, our finance chair.
Okay. And Mamie, I appreciate the opportunity to speak with you folks tonight. It's an important time in the process that we're going through in budget preparation. And that's what I wanted to talk a bit. I don't have slides. I'm just going to talk you through it. Where we are in the preparation of the budget, what happens next, and those kind of things. That's what I was should be covering tonight. And as Finance Committee, we have a position in sort of the gearbox of getting the budget prepared. We review the quarterly finances, we review the tax returns, we review all the audits and that sort of thing as a committee. But we're also involved in taking the disparate places where the budget components come together, helping put it together and get it in front of the board for their review and approval. So an idea of how the schedule has come together is in the middle of the summer, early to midsummer, several things start to happen. We start to have the staff put together their budget based on last year's operations, plus their experience in last year's operations, and any management alterations they've done and this sort of thing, to get a baseline operating budget. So it's basically, if we were to go and do last year with improvements or however the management has worked it out as a baseline program, that's what we start with. And that is, the feed from that comes from the staff. We start to see that in June, July, and it starts to be really more and more well-formed as we get on towards the 1st of October, which is another thing that I'll tell you about in a second. At the same time, the MPOC, or Master Plan Operating Committee, is going through their set of projects that they have derived from the master plan and what funding they need to make those projects work. An example you'll see if you come to the Monday night meeting is how we take those projects and separate the cost of the project into whether you can fund it from operating, which is in essence what the assessments drive. From the reserve study, which we have a healthy reserve for the replacement and repair of assets that we have, or the capital improvement fund, which is where we do collect some monies for capital improvements and collect them so that we can do new and additional projects. So we have various sources of funding. We have the operating budget. We have the master plan project. We also have other special staff projects or board projects that come up that we'll also fold in and put them in the various components. And then lastly, we have the board priorities that they put together as some of their staff planning, et cetera. So we're sort of like, we're the gearbox of how that sort of all gets put together. Now, by October 1st, what we try to do is to have a very close to final or a view of how the budget looks based on the operating components, the master plan projects, the special projects, and then other things we have to fund. So what I'm working on this afternoon and for the rest of the week will be how this all comes together in a form that we can maximize the amount of return we get from the projects that we have identified for the return of the community, operate or approve the existing projects we have in the baseline, and then balance that against the sources process that I mentioned before, how we can manage to do it in a way, a reasonable impact on the community to such that you get the maximum return for the amount of impact on these assessments or whatever. So that's what we will be presenting on Monday night, which is the first look that the board will have a look at what we think is a near final budget with some tools to work around how we'll make it close. Now, I am certain, some years we get a lot of feedback from the board and we have to incorporate it. Last year the feedback was minimal. We were able to get most agreement in that meeting. So by the November meeting, which I don't remember the exact date, the November board meeting, we will have to pass the budget so it can be published, etc. So that's the objective, to get it in front of the community and the board Monday night, and of course you can understand, and I'll go through, we do this presentation, and I assume it'll be online. We'll go through, and there's explanations of the funds, there'll be explanations of how this all works, and how we would put it all together. So I guess it's going to be out there in the board packet by Friday, wanted to go look at it in anticipation of coming to the meeting on Monday. And then once we get it in front of the board, there's a budget and a vehicle of how to close it. They'll make their executive decisions on how they want to close the budget and then vote on it in the first of November. And then we'll move back into closing out the year and following the financials as the year comes to a close and getting ready for our audits. So that is in essence what process we're going through now, and I would say by Monday you'll see where we stand as far as the meeting on Monday would be in the meeting where when we present it we'll have room for member comment afterwards, and then we'll have to reconcile it and have it ready for approval on the 1st of November. So have I answered the questions you wanted me to try to get to?
Excuse me. I think the most important thing that people need to understand is that we in fact have three buckets of revenue, but we can't just pull money arbitrarily out of the three buckets.
Correct.
Those three buckets are defined. We have an operating, we have a capital fee, and we have the reserve. And it's Buddy.
That's correct.
His job and his committee's job to be sure that we actually pull whatever we want to fund out of the appropriate buckets.
Correct. And I'll go back through, if you forgive me 1 minute, and I'll cover it again and cover money because I think it's important to understand it. The actual operation of the community, the salaries, the utilities, the lights, all those things are part of an operating budget. That's where you're funded from assessments. At the end of the year, we're supposed to be balanced for tax purposes. Is when we balance, we take in and we have spent. There are some parts of that operating income which are non-assessment income, the operation of the pools, the operation of the marina, those kind of things. Those are non-assessment income. But at the end of the day, that's all operating income, and it should balance. Then you should take in what you spend for the year. The reserve fund is where we put a substantial amount of money away because we have a substantial amount of assets in the community, and I would include, and what comes out of there are anything that's been above $1,000 that we have capitalized. The bike paths are done out of reserve funds. There's a process. The streets, the entrance signs for the neighborhoods are refurbished and repaired out of the reserve fund. Docks, roofs, buildings, tractors, trucks, all those things are, we put aside money so that we know that we can spend it on those things. We have a study that put together every 5 years that a consultant does and lays out for 30 years in advance when things need to be replaced, and they recommend how much money you should have in reserve and how much you should be putting away, because one of the things I would say, we get really excellent reviews from our auditors for being really conscientious about funding the reserve fund, because if a community is going to get into difficulties, it's because they didn't reserve enough money to fix things that their assets that need to be reserved. So that's one of the things we do. And that's a relatively large fund. That's $1 million, $1.2 million or so. It's more than that, actually, at this moment. But it isn't. You can't spend it on new stuff. You don't spend it on operating. You reserve it to be spent in the future for major kinds of things which are going to come up. The capital fee, which is what we have, it's a much smaller fund, but it is a fund that we build new things like entrance walls or new signs that we've put up. The new directional signs come out of the capital fund, but then they go into the reserve fund and then they're replaced and repaired that way. So those are the three basic funds, not to get into too much detail but underneath that. But that's how we take assessments in, we put it in reserves, we collect money for capital, and we pay all the salaries. At the end of the day, the operating fund should work to zero, and that's what we try to work.
Okay. What I'd like to do, rather than opening this up for Q&A, I'd like for Jason to go ahead and give his presentation on the pool. If Buddy, and Buddy said he would be around to answer Q&A. You might be interested in as we go through the presentation, trying to get an understanding of what we want to do to the pools and how that impacts our budget. Jason?
Thank you, Barry.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Buddy.
Bear with me. I've got a lot of pictures, so I'm going to turn on some of the lights in the middle.
Now we can go see the bottom.
Yeah. At least show up a little better. Good evening, everybody, and thank you for allowing me to attend and present tonight. I want to talk about, first of all, I'm Jason Livingston, for those of you whom I don't know yet. I'm on the board of directors. I've been involved in the board for a long time, and prior to the pools being purchased, it's been a labor of love, or an agony of love, for these last going on 11 years since we acquired the pools. Tonight, I want to talk about, instead of looking backwards and talking about how we got to this point, I want to talk about and ask you to focus with me on what we want to do going forward. We're not going to undo what we've done, and it doesn't really bear a whole lot of fruit to talk about all the different votes and surveys and meetings that have gone into acquiring those pools. So let's talk about and look forward to what we're going to do with these pools now that we have them. So really I want to talk about first, I've got a lot of pictures of some of our pools and the pools of our competition in the area. So I want to give you guys a sense of what's out there and what we have for those of you that aren't pool members or don't see them regularly or see other pools. I have three kids, two of whom are on swim teams, so every summer I get to go to a bunch of different pools and see how things are, and I'm sure our swim team folks have the same experience. Then I want to talk a little bit about our current usage, what's going on with our membership and our pricing model, and then of course talk about how universal access might work if that's the direction that the community wanted to go. And then I want to talk finally about some of the current things that the parks and Parks Amenities and Recreation Committee, the park, and the board have done recently to try to move this forward. We've been talking about it for an awful long time. So first of all, the competition. You'll notice my football fans from last night. I tried to bring something pertinent. That's the immaculate deception, is what I heard Wes McElroy talking about tonight. But this is our competition. First one, and again, for competition, I chose pools close to our area that have community pools and that are roughly in our price point. I didn't go pick Founders Bridge or Tarrington or even Foxfire, but I picked, and you'll see as we go along, and I went and took a whole bunch of pictures for ones that I couldn't get on the website. So this is my disclaimer. This is a nice, beautiful picture with people there and chairs, but every other picture you'll see were taken in the last week where the pools were closed and no one's there, no one's happy. There's no chairs out, but this is Charter Colony. And you'll see, and I'm going to point out just a couple features that they have in a relatively new pool, and then just as these go along, and you can compare and contrast what looks good, what's successful, what's not successful. But you'll see they have a slide in the middle, and on that right side where that water feature is, it looks like a mushroom, that's a zero-entry pool. That is one of the alternatives for entry into the pool that's provided under the Americans with Disabilities Act, with which all community pools have to comply. And we are taking some steps that are in the current budget to get our pools compliant, which can include chairlifts or separate ramps under there. But again, a zero-entry pool is a common feature in new pools, and Charter Colony does have one of them. It's got, again, different session facilities, and judging from a meet there, they actually are very modest. They only have a few toilets and stalls, literally three for each gender in that building. And just to be fair, here's the picture from yesterday of the same pool. Just so that, well, I'm not biased in favor of one or the other, but that's Charter Colony. Just for reference, Charter Colony assessments for 2012 were $804 a year. That includes their pool. Next one, Hampton Park. Now, Hampton Park has two different community pools in their neighborhood. They are also universal access. They charge $820 a year. This one, I think, is what they call their festival park. Again, pointing out some other features, you'll see on the back left corner is a water park. That's a water feature that has all this stuff that for the kids to play in, and it is a zero entry area also. In the back is not a clubhouse, but that's a bathroom facility. And they have, of course, they're for their swim team in the foreground. Their second pool, I think they call it Jubilee Park. Now this one, and my overlay didn't work quite right. Again, you see it's taken yesterday. It's not a terribly large pool, does not have lap lanes, but on the right side is a large water slide that enters down into the pool, and I tried to get a good picture and overlay, but it didn't work quite right. But that's, again, one of the features that are available. Now, this is also taken from the Hampton Park site, that approximately 25% of their Hampton Park income supports the pools, while only 18% of their money goes to their reserves. Next. Again, I think this is important to note. This is Magnolia Green, and if we're talking about competition to Brandon Mill, this is it. This is as closely matched to what the product is that Brandon Mill provides as we'll find. Of course, they don't have a lake, but they do have a golf course. I think they have 9 holes complete so far. They will have 18 holes. This is the first of 3 planned community pools, which, again, is brand new. And I understand that folks from Club Source Design, which we'll hear from about later, helped with this product. Some features here you'll see is the zero entry pool in the foreground, a water feature in the mushroom. In the background you'll see is a wrought iron fencing, which is a very nice looking product. And that goes all the way around. Some things also around that area are some extensive landscaping all around the parking lot edging into the forest area. There is a hard surface basketball court, including a hard surface badminton court next to it as well. More pictures. But again, this is important because if you saw the Observer article, I want to say it was about 3 weeks ago, it was a very nice article about all the excitement and activity in the construction in Magnolia Green. This is where the construction is happening. This is where people are being shown houses. These are houses in the same price point, or probably a little slightly higher than a Brandon Mill home. But again, new schools out there. They're in the Cosby District, all new facilities. New sidewalks, everything's new. Everything's new. So it's this is where we're going. They have a few hundred homes built now. They're slated for thousands of new construction. So if I can get a brand new house in that neighborhood versus a 30-year-old house in Brandon Mill, that's just something that when we talk about value and we're thinking about our competition that we need to really be mindful of. So now let's see Brandon Mill pools, and I was joking with Wendy earlier that I was trying to find some pretty pictures of our pools. I don't want to bias us. We don't have any pictures of our pools on our website. And that's what we do have is a really, really old picture of a seems like a grandmother and a daughter, but that's at the country club pool. So that's got to be at least 11 years old. But we all remember a time when the Brandon Mill Country Club owned 5 of the pools that were in the neighborhood. One is gone forever, and they sold off 3 to the association. But nothing says Brandon Mill more than, of course, a boat that says Brandon Mill, but a picture of the sunset on our lake. And it's also interesting, too, if you've attended any of the board meetings or had some insomnia and listened to recordings of our board meetings, that Director Jack Bettine has been working really on some different efforts to market. Brandermill. And one of the things that he's focused on has been our website and our web presence and how that can be a very, very powerful marketing tool. And if you, like me, don't have a life either, you look around at all these other homeowner association websites to try to get pictures of their pools. Well, that's one thing that you can use. In fact, that's one thing Jack just suggested, was that we get some really special pictures of Brandermill, and that's what we put on our homepage. And he brought in a number of samples to demonstrate, and they were really impressive. So just want to suggest that also as something to consider, is not only are our pools an amenity, but they are an advertising feature. And I'll show you how some of those can work as well. Here's St. Ledger's, taken yesterday. Again, no chairs out, but you see we've got a shade structure on the right. There are different kinds of shade structures. And I'll have another picture if I remember. No, sorry, I had more pictures. But we do have two diving boards, which is a nice feature to have. That's a feature that is not typically available on the newer pools. From a risk management perspective, it's high. Diving is not as popular of a sport. I don't think it increases our liability insurance because it's so high already. But it is nice. We do have this kids pool in the foreground. On the left side are stairred entries versus a zero entry. There's a rail typically, but that's laid down. And then the competition pool with the lap lanes is on the other side. Outside of the fenced area is a playground area, and within the fenced area on the far side are sand volleyball pits. North Beach. Again, I turned around this angle so we could get a nice view of the lake. Obviously, in the winter, when no one's at the pool, it's got an even better view of the lake. Here's the one that's used for swim meets. It has a child's pool way off to the side out of that picture. But again, we also have two diving boards in the diving well in that center pool area. Last one, Harbor Point. Again, last night, a beautiful sunset. This is the smallest of the three pools. But it does have the best facility in terms of a community type center. Mm-hmm. From our master plan, which was approved in March 2009, Harbor Point was actually suggested as having the best opportunities to expand and do far greater things. Even though it's the least central to the community, it has the most opportunities because of its layout, proximity to the lake. So now, where's Brandermill? Well, our current yearly assessment for comparison is $432 a year. Our pool revenues, which is, this is based on data provided to the board last week or 3 weeks ago, is $227,000. We were projected to have closer to $250,000 or $260,000. The projected operating costs from the 2012 budget, again, we won't know the final numbers until the end of the season, are $247,000. So this year, we have a loss, at least on the operations, in the $20,000 range. Now, our pools are not fully costed. We don't have the accounting mechanism to assign staff time to each project. So, for example, every time Al is dealing with Swim Metro or Jane dealt with a contractor for mowing or to do a repair, you know, that is just soft cost that's absorbed. That's our indirect cost. And that's not assigned to the pools. So, if we show a hard cost loss of $20,000, it doesn't capture the full cost of the pool. Pool memberships over time. I just got data back to 2006. There's more available, but I don't know how helpful it would be. Currently, our model is a fee-based model that allows, of course, Brandermill residents, and then non-residents are allowed to be members. They pay a modest surcharge. At last check, it was $60 extra per non-resident. You'll see in the last column is the 2012 that we're down 80 members from last year, or I should say 80 memberships. I don't know the reasoning behind that loss, but obviously we want to understand why memberships are decreasing. I mean, we can all suspect that it's because of the economy, or we can suspect that it's because of more competition in the neighborhood. Maybe we've priced ourselves out, or maybe we've let our product go a little stale. Or any combination of those things. The important thing, though, is to note that the percentage of non-Brandermill residents has been relatively constant It averages around 14%, with a high of 16.4% in 2009. That's what this next handy-dandy slide I was playing with, this trying to get a table and graph and really wow you with my skills with PowerPoint. So, more money. So right now, the entire community pays $420,000 per year, $30 roughly per house, for the reserve funding for the pools. Now, that's the reserve and replacement fund that Buddy Whitfield just spoke about. That's for when something goes wrong at the pools, when a pump fails or at the end of its useful life, and that's replaced. Concrete expenses, I want to say budget around $50,000 of concrete starting 10 years out, but then it's $50,000 a year after that. And again, that is the single most significant cost for the pools, is that concrete on the decking. But right now, everybody pays for that. Everybody pays through the reserve fund. Anytime any new repair is done to the pool, we all pay. Anytime there's an operational shortfall, the entire community pays. Anytime you want to make an improvement to the pool, and some examples of those in the past have been buying pool covers, very reasonable expense, but there's not money coming in from pool operations to pay for that. That's something that the entire community pays. And it was, again, important to maintain your value and keep the concrete looking good that you just spent so much money to repair. So under this current model that we have, funding requirements and additional capital expenses will always be paid by the community. So if nothing changes, if you keep your status quo under this membership model, you know, it's not likely, based on history, that we're ever going to have operational revenues that will cover that. So every member of the pool, every member of the community, whether you're a member or not, will always subsidize the pools. The only question is how much. Again, to hammer this point home, I wanted to underline it four times. Again, reserve funding requirements are always going to be paid by the community. Additional capital costs will always be paid by the community. Indirect costs, which are those staffing costs that I mentioned, trash removal, landscaping by our in-house staff, always paid by the community, and then any operational shortfall will always be paid for by the community. So universal pool access. Heard the term, let's all make sure we're talking about the same thing, at least for our purposes. I've described universal pool access means that each resident, just by virtue of being a resident of Brandon Mills, is going to have access to the three neighborhood pools without restrictions and without any additional user fees. The assessments for each of the residential members would be increased to cover the costs of operating those pools. So again, we're just substituting who's paying these operating costs, because you, the community, are already paying all the other costs. So now, for years we've been talking about the capacity of the pools. You know, will they hold a community of 3,800 homes of anywhere between 11 and 13,000 residents, because we have a tough time getting sound demographic information. Well, Higgins and Gerstmeyer, this is the most recent study, which we finally approved in October 2011, was to try to get us this information. We all had what we believed good information and well-intentioned thoughts of what the capacity was. So we needed to hire someone, though, to get us objective information. We hired consultants Higgins and Gerstmeyer. And they spent half of 2011 going back and forth, reviewing the numbers, and trying to provide information for us, actionable information, so that our committees and our board can figure out what our options are moving forward. So we wanted to know then, what's the capacity of the pools? How many people can it hold? Reasonable. Second, we wanted to know is, based on our demographics in Brander Mill, how many people do you think will actually use the pools? We're not an age-restricted community, but we're not a family, or I should say, full of families with kids under age 10. So we're somewhere between. And then the last part is, if there is a difference between what we have as capacity and what we think our usage will be, what do we need to do to bridge the gap? You know, now, these calculations are typically done by the square footage of surface area of the water. And it, you know, there are guidelines all over the map, but between 8 and 10 square feet of surface area per person is what is recommended. So, if we use that calculation and use the square footage, Higgins and Gerstmeyer came up with in their report, somewhere between 2,200 and 2,500 people. And I think that's just way off knowing the pools as we do, and it's not what our understanding had been in the past. And without saying too much, the board was not entirely comfortable with the Higgins and Gerstmeyer report. In the past, our thoughts and the thoughts of staff and folks who've been involved said our capacity is about 740 people. And when I say 740, they go, oh, there's 13,000 in Brandon. Well, that's 740 people in the water at the same time. Now, how often does that happen? Well, you look at our declining membership numbers, you look at our actual pool usage, and that rarely happens. If it happens at all, it'll happen Memorial Day, July 4th, and Labor Day. Now, you know, you don't build a pool, though, for your capacity on your busiest, craziest day of the year. If you went any time during the week, during the summer, you'll find that our pools have sufficient capacity for our current usage. The question is, what is their real capacity? So, to try to close the loop on this, what's the bottom line? What's this going to cost you? Well, right now, if we figure it's $250,000, our actual costs for pool operations. Let's just round it up to $300,000 for more lifeguard coverage, more chemicals, whatever it is. We'll take that $300,000, just divide it by our 3,800 homes, and you get about $79 a home. $79 a home. That's what makes our budget indifferent as to our operating costs. And that allows every member, every resident in Brandon will access to our pools. So, what's next? That's what we're all here about. So this is one of my favorite quotes from Donald Rumsfeld. It says, there are known knowns, and these are things we know that we know, and there are known unknowns. That's to say, the things we don't know, we know that we don't know, but there are also the unknown unknowns, and there are things we don't know we don't know. And never has that been more true than for the pools. We know there are a lot of things we don't know. And some things we know a little bit about, but we don't know the answer. So, for example, a known unknown would be ADA, Americans with Disability Act compliance. We know that that's coming down the pipeline, that all pools open to the community are going to be required to comply with Americans with Disability Act guidelines. And they're reasonable. And the board has taken some steps to already make our walking paths and bike trails more handicap accessible. So we know that the ADA is going to apply, but we don't know everything about the ADA and what that's going to cost and how we can get our pools to comply. So that's a known unknown. Again, some of those require very extensive modifications. For example, the ramp at North Beach Pool. I should have gotten a good pool picture of that. Well, it's very steep and it's straight. But the ADA requires that it be a much shallower slope, and I think it's every 12 feet there has to be a landing and then changing of direction. So it's got a snake down. Again, makes sense. But it's things like that we don't know. Lifts into the pool. How many lifts do we need? Do we need to change the number of lifts per pool depending on capacity? Bathroom facilities. We believe that they're inadequate from our own evidence, but we don't know what the right number is for our current capacity or what our capacity could be. So those are some of the things we don't know, the known unknowns and the unknown unknowns. It's the unknown unknowns that we're retaining consultants for. We started the ball rolling with Higgins, and we've taken some steps to move the ball a little further. So we have a park committee, the Parks, Amenities, and Recreation Committee. This is the charge of the park, and naturally the jurisdiction of the pools falls under the park. In June 2012, they issued an RFP to get many of the same things that we were looking for when we asked Higgins and Gerstmeyer to help us get some information. So they issued an RFP, and there were some proposals submitted. The board evaluated those, and in September 2012, the board approved a contract with Club Source Design. And I'll just speak a little bit about Club Source Design. This is what they're in the business of doing. They put in new pools, and they refurbish old pools. This is their their business. They have a team approach where they engage consultants from different companies with expertise in the different areas that are necessary. Very comfortable with their proposal, very comfortable with their experience level. Wish we had gone to them 18 months ago. But we retain them to do these following few things on a very narrow engagement. So they're going to help us actually determine the capacity of our existing parking pools and decking, because those are different requirements for each pool. We can have plenty of parking, but not enough cement decking, and that's going to affect our capacity. We can have a huge pool of water surface, but not enough parking, that's going to affect our capacity number. So they're going to help get us good information, and they have an approach that takes the information they develop in these early stages and package it in a way that can be advanced at advance. So whether it's a year from now or 10 years from now, if you want to do something with North Beach, well, go to them and they'll pull out the same designs, the same drawings, and start building on that, and then they don't have to duplicate the work that we're already paying them to do now. We've also asked them to factor in the potential increase of facilities needed if we went to universal access. Again, they're the experts. They've done this before, and they did it recently. Some examples they had included Kingsmill, which is, again, in Williamsburg, but a similar community-owned pool. They went through substantial renovations, put out a beautiful product, and got the community behind it and supported it because it was such a big commitment by the community. They've already started their work, taking measurements and drawings, and the board has authorized the manager to find funding in this year's budget, which we've realized some efficiencies and some staffing changes. There is sufficient money in this year's budget, so the board's allocated that so that they can get started right away and try to get us some good information. So tonight, now, we talked about a little bit where we've been and what our competition is and where we are and what our financing models. I'm going to ask you all to imagine what if. What if our Harbor Point pool looked like this? It could look at that over the water. Wouldn't that be a neat front picture on our website? Wouldn't that be what you'd want to put in your materials if you were selling your house? What if St. Ledger's looked like this? Now, I didn't make these up. These are from the master plan that this community had a hand in generating, that we paid an awful lot of money for consultants to recommend, and that's been on the books and on the bookshelf for almost 4 years. What if North Beach looked like this, finished all the way down to the water, could really take advantage of that beautiful lakefront property? What if? What if these were your pools? So what direction do you want the pools to go? So if you see possibilities, the future belongs to those who seize possibilities before they come obvious. So I see opportunities. I hope you do too. And I appreciate your attention, and I'm glad to answer any questions.
Thank you, Jason.
Question?
If you would give us your name, please. Yes, go ahead.
The $79, is that per year additional?
Yes.
Per family?
Yes. So the current rate for a family membership is $435 a year. So obviously, if you're an existing pool member, you know, it's a great bargain for you. If you never use the pools, yeah, that's $80 out of pocket. I'd respond, though, that it when you talk about value, that I'm not going to get any value out of it because I don't use the pools. Well, there's certainly guest options, but I'd say that the value of your house increases by the value of a perpetual pool membership. It also puts us basically on a more level playing field of our competition, which includes all the new neighborhoods that are not age-restricted that have been constructed in the last 15 years, include the universal access model.
Yes.
Doug Lane, Rockport Land. So it's $6.50 a month, basically. And so I guess my question is, constraints from the board. Can the board just raise our assessments and do a project like this, or do they have to get the vote of the community to be able to do something like this? You know, how?
There's two questions you asked there. You said do projects like that.
Yes.
And that's a different question, so let me take that separately.
Okay.
But to start, I don't want everybody to have to turn their head. I'll come over here. To talk first about if the board board wanted to go to universal access, or if the community wanted to go to universal access, there's nothing in the documents that require a community vote. So the answer to your first question is, four people on the board could do it on their own at a meeting. That's the short of it. Obviously, it's sensitive. There are a lot of folks that are passionate on both sides of the issue. Politically, I mean, I don't care. I'm off the board in April. but obviously, we're your friends, your neighbors. You know, you don't want to do anything that's going to make your neighbors upset. But obviously, there are strong arguments both for and against it. The second part of your question was the projects. Now, if you go into something like those exotic drawings, that's going to take money, a lot of money. And to get that kind of money, you need a commitment. It's not going to work. It's never going to happen, I can tell you that, doing just a user fee-based model, which means your pools will be at status quo at best. At worst, you'll be in a long, slow decline like half the pools we go see at swim meets, a long, slow decline. So your best case is status quo. So my suggestion, my personal suggestion, is get all of us on board, and then we start talking about those projects. Now, the projects can be funded a number of different ways. I'll let the folks who will stay deal with that. But they can be funded through a assessment increase, or can be funded by a special assessment. The board can do either one of those on its own, although in the past, the community has voted on options to do a special assessment. The last time was the 2020 plan, which failed miserably, ended up costing the community a ton of money, and we ended up doing everything in the plan anyway, except for the universal access part. But we still bought the pools. We just bought them for twice as much money.
Is there a constraint, though, about how much the assessment can be raised, like a certain percentage in any given year, that there's a certain percentage?
Yeah, that's a good question.
There's
some discussion about that. Brandon has what's called a maximum annual assessment, which is basically it forces, it's a kind of a plug number, for lack of a better word, but it's raised by 5% every year automatically and has been for the last 35 years. That's a number out here. That's the maximum annual assessment. Now, the board can choose to levy an amount less than or more than the maximum annual assessment, but up to the amount. So for many years, the board had a low or no assessment increase. And only one year in the last 12 now has there been an assessment that exceeded 5%. So over time, there's been this spread that has developed. And my understanding is that spread exceeds $100 between the 432 that our assessments are now and what the actual maximum assessment is. And I defer to management or our accountant as to what that number actually is. So, yes.
The special assessment would not fall.
Special assessment does not. All bets are off for special assessment. Yeah. The last special assessment the board did was for Hurricane Isabel cleanup.
Correct.
Which raised $250,000. Yeah. It was a one-year assessment, if I remember right. Yes, sir.
Dennis Peterson from Winterberry Ridge. Has there been any in the studies, is there any evaluation or expectation of what going to universal access would do to the existing facilities? Would it overtax them? Do you have anyone suggested that it's going to suddenly have a much bigger increase of use?
Well,
can we handle it?
Well, exactly. That's the known unknown. That's the $80 a year question. But no, it's the million-dollar question, and that's why we've tried to get consultants to help us really get good information and get a handle on that. I think anecdotal evidence suggests our bathroom facilities aren't adequate now. Okay, the question is, how do we pay for that? Do we ask the entire community to pay $100,000 for more bathrooms that's used by 565 families a year? So, but if we only improve to the current level, say if there are three poorly working bathrooms now, we replace them with three new bathrooms, we're at status quo. We're never going to get to the next level until you start thinking about the next level. So if the community wants to stay at status quo, sure, fix the three bathrooms and build the entire community an extra $10 a year, and that'll pay for it.
One follow-up, I mean, the sample that you gave from the master plan, pick one, St. Ledger or any of them, give an estimate of what so
discussions that rough construction costs for water surface is $100 per square foot of water. So if I build 1,000 square feet of water, which isn't that much really, it's $100,000. So that gets you, what, a 20 by 50 pool. $100,000, if my math is right. So with that being said, those were a whole lot of different things. I can't imagine, I wouldn't even venture a guess. That's not my expertise. But obviously those were significant. There was a lazy river in there. Most of those seem to involve tearing out everything that's in place and starting from scratch. So I would say safely it's in the millions. If you're talking about doing all three and doing them to that level of... But that's a dream. You know, you can always come back from that. I think I just gave David a heart attack.
I already knew it was millions.
Yeah.
But it was
400
something. Well, that was the estimate. I think he scaled it back for 400,000.
Yeah, and they kept the same footprint. Yes. They didn't enlarge anything.
They fixed it up nice, but yeah.
So, yeah, so the sky's the limit. So.
Jim?
You were
Jim Strecken, Goss, Timber Ridge. What would you do if a pool was filled to capacity? Say its capacity was 250 people, and it was filled to capacity, and more people showed up. Close the gate, don't let them in, let them fall over each other? Or
no, we have to. There are fire regulations and safety regulations, and our lifeguards, I think, are already instructed. Whether we hit capacity on July 4th at North Beach, or today, or in a future scenario. I mean, capacity is capacity. You can't compromise on safety. But you'll see from our usage records, where they keep a log of how many folks are there, that there are only a couple days per year that we even flirt with usage. We do the free community day early in the summer, where we do let the pools available to everyone. Now, I don't know how well it's publicized or if it's available, but if that's any indicator, we still don't come anywhere near capacity. So, you were second, then come right back. Yes, sir.
Glenn Hinton, Harbor Bluffs, I'm in Harbor Point. My daughter and family are living with us right now, and they had a membership at Harbor Point this summer, so I was over there. And this is slightly off of your looking way to the future in terms of big improvements, but one of the things that I suggest to you, and I think really needs almost immediate attention, and we have the reserve fund to do maintenance in the pools, sounds like. The condition of the Harbor Point pool, I can't speak for the others, but the Harbor Point pool is, I would rate, very poor. Concrete coping that's missing. The chairs have vinyl strips, and they at one time were maroon, but most of that coloring is off, so it's black. It's not an inviting, as beautiful as the setting is,
yep,
it's not currently kept up very well, and it's not an inviting thing. And that could potentially have some impact on the reason that your numbers are falling off. But if we want to gain support for this, and I don't know what the timing is for the board to make a decision on universal access, but I think we've got to provide, even in the short run, a higher quality product and something that people can relate to as being something worthwhile.
Well,
One other thing, my daughter made me promise this.
Okay.
Pool hours. In Harbor Point, they didn't open the pools until 12 o'clock noon. For a family that has young kids, they want to be over there sooner, and they're leaving normally at 12 or 1, put the kids down for a nap. And I think even the other pools, they opened earlier, but not that much, maybe 11. I think those are the kinds of things that aren't that big a deal that we can do fairly short-term. And I'm in favor, by the way, of what you're driving at, but I think we really need to not make this a two-year thing where we don't do anything in the interim.
Well, and I agree with everything you're saying, and you don't have the benefit of seeing Al behind you nodding the whole time. But it's our classic chicken egg. We want pools to be outstanding. We want them to be the places that are on the front of our website, that your realtor takes folks to show them what's in their backyard at Harbor Point, how great the pool is. But we can't get to that point at 565 members only paying user fees. And we can't raise their user fees any higher because we're already at the top of the market for that. So we have an obligation as a board and as management to maintain our assets, maintain the community association.
And I guess I'm pointing out, I don't think that's really been done to this point.
So Al's nodding behind you. We understand the conditions for it. There's a certain amount of equipment that's replaced each year. The park, we'll be used to, and I haven't seen it yet, but it does an end-of-the-year pool report saying how much equipment used to be replaced, with these chairs, where they're allocated. I think Al and our other main staff will review it. So anyway, he's nodding. Obviously, we want to take care of that. We want it to be safe first, and then pleasing to look at second. And then if we can get a great selling feature while we're at it, let's do that. But again, I can put $20,000 into Harbor Point and get you exactly the product you have today.
Well, I understand that. I guess we understand each other.
Yes.
There's a certain level that whether it's $20,000 or $40,000, whatever it is, it needs to be brought up to an acceptable level that would attract even the current users to re-up for next year.
I understand.
And then what you're talking about with the universal access, which I fully support, is to take it then to the next level.
Mm-hmm. That point. Well said. Yes. Wait, I have used that. Sorry. Yes. And then maybe next.
Carol Grandy, Sterling's Bridge, a new resident.
Welcome.
And when I first came here, I thoroughly enjoyed the pools. I have been using the pools close to every day in the summer. And yes, I've noticed some things that needed to be taken care of on all three pools. I've been in all three of them. I've never had the most wonderful thing. I could go shopping, get all my groceries, non-perishables, and stop at a pool and swim for 2 hours, and then go home and unpack my groceries, and then at 6 o'clock at night, jump in my car and go to a pool that's closer to me and swim until 7:30 and come home and relax and have a lovely evening. I think it's phenomenal. I think it's wonderful. Our homes, like you say, we all have older homes, so I feel that do what we need to do in order to be up to standard for capacity, when people can enter the water, or we need things that help people to get in the water. But I don't necessarily feel like you need to go hog wild and make all these, because this community is an older community. We have to, that's the reality. So we should stay in the standard of what this community is. So in my feeling is, repair, take care of what we have, do a little bit, but not necessarily go hog wild.
Well, I'd encourage you to join the swim team at its away meets. and you'll see all kinds. You'll see the newest, greatest facilities, and you'll see exactly what you're describing, which is the long, slow decline.
Oh, that's what that is. A long, slow
decline. Yes, ma'am.
The swim, does this community really, do we have, what? Who is our swim team? How many kids are we? How many kids come to swim meets at our pools?
Well, there's 60 a year, three away, three home meets. I want to say there's 140 kids on the Brandon swim team.
Yep.
Probably a like number of.
They have all over Brandon,
don't they? Most of them.
Imagine how great your team though would be if all of your Brandon kids were on the same team, because they automatically had membership to a pool they could walk to or ride their bikes. That's what it used to be when the club owned all five pools.
Yes,
yes, it was.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, a couple of questions. First one's for Buddy. Do our commercial members also participate in that $30 a year pool assessment?
Let me answer that.
Okay.
The commercial members pay around 11% of overall assessment. So if we take in $2 million a year of assessments, commercial members pay around $20,000.
something, I don't know the exact number.
Yeah, it's around 11 or 12%, I think. So, yes, commercial members do pay part of that. I use $30 as just a figure. We pay around $120,000 and change each year just dedicated for the reserve fund attributable to the pools. So that's $120,000 a year. I only divided it by the 3,800 owners. But yes, commercial members do pay part of that.
Yeah, and in fact, Jason, there's no way to not have them do that. I mean, we can't discriminate one versus the other with that, as I understand it.
That's been the understanding so far.
So everybody paid so far. Yeah.
So whether there's a shortage, you know, whether we got a $20,000 loss, that loss is also absorbed in the same percentage by commercial members. If there's a new pool cover bill, same percentage by the commercial members. We don't have segregated funding.
Second question back to you. I appreciate your sensitivity to what I think a lot of people consider the third rail of this community is. But to diminish some of that, you don't know what you don't know. Have you talked to some of our competition regarding the number of people, percentage-wise, residents that attend their pools? Because my concern is right now we're utilizing maximum capacity, maybe 6% of our entire population can be handled currently with the pool. And I can anticipate that universal access will increase that significantly. And
well, if I got, I'm sorry.
Overtaxing of the pools and having turned people away.
Again, that's what we've tried to hire. Now we're on our second round of consultants to try to get objective information. If I say it, not going to believe me because I'm a proponent. You know, if someone's against it, I'm not going to believe them because I know they have a built-in bias. But we've hired some objective folks with expertise, and we're hoping that's what gives us the information. As far as your percentages, though, if we say that we've got roughly 500 Brandon families, our members, you know, that's actually a little more than 1/8 of our members. So we're already north of 13% participation of members. So it's higher than 4 or 5%, but still not a huge percentage. But I understand your point. The concern is, do we have capacity, and what's our usage likely to be? Yes, sir.
I, from what I heard, though, which I think people maybe lose in perspective, is that those numbers are for the people in the pool at one time.
Exactly.
And when you go to the pool, I mean, not everybody, the whole family is not in the pool at the same time. Mm-hmm. People are just, you know, sitting around the pool. So the numbers are strictly for the numbers of people in the pool at the same time. So you're not going to turn away at the gates.
Exactly.
Necessarily. You know, because there's a lot of people.
And if you look at a typical log from North Beach on a Saturday, you might get 300 people on that log. That's throughout the whole day. That's not there at the same time. I might have 100 in the morning and then 200 after lunch. So it's really hard to take the data we have and figure out what our usage is going to be. So again, we're trying to find experts that have that background that can help us fill in those blanks. Yes, ma'am.
Mary Catherine, being here for Pebble Creek. It seems, and I apologize if you've already said this is what we're doing with the new consultant, but it seems like information would be helpful is to look at our competition, what they offer, what their facilities look like, the aesthetics and all of that, and then how much of that affects their membership, and then how can we close the gap? How much do we need to improve beyond status quo to compete? And I can just give anecdotal stories, but I know of families who left the pool this summer to join Woodlake when they had their you can join Woodlake just for the summer deal in like May. If you join in May, you can be at Woodlake just for the summer, and it was cheaper than coming to Brandonville for just the summer. Plus, they have an exercise facility for parents who can take classes, and there was just much more to offer there. And then I know families who left to go to the country club because they felt it was cheaper just for the summer than to come to the Brandonville pool. So they had more to offer. Their price was a little bit lower. What do we need to do? And can this consultant help us with that? Are they going to be able to give us information that will say you need to improve to X in order to get Y?
Well, the two-part answer is yes, they can help us, but that's not what we hired them to do.
Okay.
Not this occasion.
Okay.
And again, that actually gives you comfort that they really understand the scope of the engagements, that they're not promising anything more. They kept it very limited, but I'm very comfortable we'll get exactly that product versus somebody that overpromises and underdelivers, which may have happened to us in the past. these marketing questions, and I think you already know the answers because you asked them. You know, do we know that there are pools that are in better condition than ours? Yes. I mean, we've got evidence that there are some with a lot of features that we don't have. We've got evidence of maintenance problems, convenience problems of hours. So we also know that another competitor, Woodlake, offers a lot more than we do. We know that American Family offers year-round indoor swimming, which we don't. There's a lot of competition out there. We're at the highest price point that I think we can bear. In fact, Buddy thinks we should lower it much more. And we've got a lot of needs for money. So this is a challenge. This is a big challenge. But I think you've identified all the key components. There's a lot of market forces. You in a second.
Bobby Joyner, Whispering Oaks. So does the $79 get us better bathrooms, no stains on the bottom of the pools, lights working and all of that, or does that just get us to cover all the operating costs?
That gets us all in the same lifeboat. That gets everybody into the pools. That gets us all equally committed to the solutions and the future. Makes us price indifferent as to the operating costs, which I grossed up at $300,000, but that's lifeguards and chemicals. You're already paying for everything else. Any of the improvements you suggest, you're going to pay for anyway. So, $79 gets everybody into the pools and gets us all committed. Yes, sir.
Chris Glaze from Woodbridge Crossing / Magnolia Green. I think
it's a competition.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, Magnolia Green's dues are about $800 per year, and that includes pool access. So, you know, estimating $80 more a year for brand new pools really is not that much more money. And I think once the board gets all the data that they need, they're just going to have to make a decision. I'm for universal pool access for Brandon. It would be, I mean, at some point I'm going to sell the condo, and that would be a great selling feature. It's like, hey, you buy this place, you're going to get pool access along with the trails and this, that, and the other. So I certainly think it property value-wise with universal pools, even if you don't use them, will certainly help your property value if you ever decide to sell your place.
Well, I'm sure our marketing folks would love to know why you bought the Magnolia Green instead of the Grand Room.
The condo was too small.
And
we didn't want a 30-year-old house with a kitchen from the 70s.
Fair enough.
You know, the same price point.
Who was... Yeah, so you, why all
that? Jenny Dacey, Papa Grove. The $79 is universal access to the pools in the condition they currently are.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. I just wanted to make sure I was understanding.
Well, Jason, to clarify a little bit, though, there is reserve money that can be done to improve
There's money
the status of what we have.
But
in the footprint and the product, if it can be repaired and fixed, but it's still, I guess where you're going is that it's still the same pool footprint, the same product just brought up to us.
Yeah.
It's
going
to increase. Absolutely. We're going to pay for this.
Right.
Well,
after
exactly.
That 79.
But without a mandate, without a group commitment, you know, that's never going to happen. We can all agree on that. So, if that's a place you want to get, at some point, we've all got to start rowing in the same direction. Yes, sir.
David Shine, Spring Gate. I'm opposed to the pools in general. I think they should be closed. Having said that, what I haven't seen is any evidence that this would actually increase the sale price or have any factor in the sale price in Brandermill. This gentleman just said the obvious. Other people have said it. These are 30-year-old homes. They have to be renovated. I think people are a lot more concerned, especially with the difficult finances that we're facing, with the quality of the house, the quality of the school district, can you get on and off the POHI, than whether there's a pool in the neighborhood. And my request to the board would be to get the other side of the story find out whether any of this will improve the sale price of our houses. And if it will, then come back. And I think your best model might be to have one nice pool not close to the country club, because people can join the country club, as you've heard. That might be the better solution. Create two parks out of the other two pools. Because I'm not seeing a big demand for the pools. I think you've got it here, and I think you saw it at 545 people. And AmFam, I talked to people, and they love that AmFam facility up on Woolridge. And I think that's what really put a crimp in this thing, and you just heard Woodlake. So if somebody came to me and said, we talked to 15 realtors who've sold houses in Brandermill, Woodlake, etc., and they said, these pools are what are going to really make a difference so we can sell a few houses in Brandermill, then I think you've got an argument to come to the homeowners and say, let's spend some money. But I'm not here to spend money on this.
All right. I appreciate it. Thank you. Yeah.
Dennis Lacey, Timber Ridge. The swim team, is that increasing in participation? Homes in Brandermill now have children that are grown.
I think just first to folks that know better, my understanding is that the membership on the swim team has been fairly constant, and we're actually one of the larger swim teams in the area.
We were a little bit down this year compared to last year. Last year we had a great team. To your point, though, I think a lot of the families that we lost this year were due to the age of the children. They became 15, 16, 17 years old, and that's when we lose a lot of whether it be driving, girls, boys, different stuff. But they have other interests other than being on the swim team. And therefore, the value is not there for them to buy a family membership to come to the pool because they're teenagers.
This is not necessarily a pro or con, but to that point, I think he's right. I think demographics, communities tend to go through cycles. If we want to attract younger families to buy homes and make it more affordable than elsewhere, one of the things they're going to be looking for is recreation for their kids. So I mean, to counter probably what this gentleman said, but I think it's short-sighted to think that that the pools don't. It may not be a big selling point to some people, but if you don't have them, it's a big negative to a lot of people.
Or especially if travelers come back and visit and bring their kids. Yeah,
exactly.
Before we come back to it.
Are there any other questions for either Jason or Buddy? Yes, Doug.
What's the next step? The question is, so you presented it to us, and where are we going with it? What's the next step? What is the
Well, the next step, again, a good question. Next step that's in process is our consultants have been retained, which is Club Source Design. They are doing their work. They've already started. They will finish earlier rather than later because the board determined that funding this year was a priority for that project. We'll get that information back. It's not, again, what could happen. Your board could decide to vote this year and try to implement this next year for next summer. That's a scenario. I wouldn't even guess whether that's likely or not, and that would make poor Buddy pull his hair out because he'd have to pull the numbers for that. Some on the board favor putting this out to a referendum. It's not required, but it's a pretty big decision for the community. That's certainly an option. If that was going to happen, I can't see that happening anytime before the regular annual meeting in April, and which would make it impossible to implement in 2013. So what you could do now is, if you see something you like, talk to your neighbors, call or email staff, call or email a member of the board, tell them what your thoughts are one way or another. Communicate. Yes?
One last question. Back in September of 2008, Billingsville actually published a draft of the referendum. And a week later, it was pulled off. The board decided not to go through with that. Why did that happen?
Well, okay, if you want to get bogged down in detail, it was a question earlier about whether this could only be assessed to residential members or commercial members. I have a position that I think supported or not, that we can assess only residential members for this increase, $79 per residential member. There's another position that says, no, if you raise assessments, you've got to raise it by the same percentage for every member, which means we have to raise commercial assessments by that same percentage. So if call it $80, roughly a 20% increase in assessments, means I have to increase commercial assessments 20%. Now that doesn't strike me as fair when commercial members already pay a lot of money in assessments and really get some tenuous value for it. But I believe our documents provide support for that. But if you have a referendum, I can't exclude commercial members from the vote. At that point, there was a discussion that if we have this referendum and let commercial members vote, that commercial members vote in larger numbers and a greater participation percentage. You asked, I don't know what it is. But they vote in a higher percentage, and that with that provision, if you accept that you have to raise commercial assessments 20%, that your commercial members would wipe out any close margin that was in favor. And I believe that there's a 10 point favorable position on universal access in the community, but having a significant amount of commercial members skew it because they've got the business voting for a 20% increase of their own assessments to pay for your pools. So of course they can vote against it. So the board, I think, collectively decided that wasn't the right referendum at that time. It would have just set us back more than helped. So I don't know if that answers it. It was again, more information than any of you probably wanted. Yes, sir.
One suggestion is, here you're presenting to the NRC about this topic, and you're saying we'll just talk to your neighbors. One of the possibilities the board could potentially use the NRC to do it more formally, and charge the NRC to actually talk to your neighbors and take some polls or do something that actually gets the word out in a more prescribed fashion. Board has some decisions to make about this whole thing. So that's what's
sure. And I appreciate that, and anyone of you that have ever attended a board meeting know that it is rare to get those seven folks to agree on even the big picture, the broad strokes, much less something as drastic as universal access. But I do appreciate your point as well taken.
Yes.
I'd just like to, as a resident, to speak to the issue just for a second. From the earliest vision of this community and written in our official descriptions and language, this community was designed to be and has been praised for its resort-like atmosphere. It goes back to the earliest days of this community. It's hard to be a resort without a pool. I would come down on the side of upgrading our pools to make them more contemporary and attraction. I'm talking about the amenities, the slides. What's it cost to put a couple of hoses up to make a waterfall, and so forth. Those kinds of aesthetic things, I believe, would be relatively modest as far as things that you could do.
Sure.
And I this is voicing my opinion as Joe Citizen. I believe it's a valuable asset that we have to maintain, and I believe it contributes. We don't want to become a rental community. I'm not criticizing or denigrating anyone who rents. But I do believe we have to maintain. It's important to all residents to maintain our property values. That we become, if we have people live here who have a vested interest in the community, that's the way we'll maintain the quality. Aesthetically of this community, and so whatever it is we end up doing, we need to do it.
Yeah,
I do come down on the side of, it sounds like Tom Romzo, and I come down on the side of supporting the pools, and believe they should be upgraded.
Appreciate your comments. I agree with everything you just said.
You know, one of the things that I've heard, and all the staff members have left, but one of the things the NRC has been doing over the summer has been delivering welcome totes to new home buyers, and based on what I've heard Jennifer and Al said, we have a lot of young families moving into our neighborhood. And the pools really are great for them. That is a selling point for them. Yeah, I'm an old resident in more than one way. But at the same time, you know, when I want to sell to a community. And having those young families here help us make us a community. And not only that, but I think even the marketing committee has noted that lots of times when we get young families moving here, their families get larger or life gets better for them economically, they stay in Brandon Mills. They just buy bigger homes. So we're constantly growing, and that's something that we need to remember, that we are a community of all different ages, different backgrounds. And that's important for us as a community to grow.
Hard to follow that. Thank you all for having me.
Before everybody leaves, I'm going to get the Honorable Joe Hammond. And there's cake in the back, still coffee.
Hey, it's Andy Schreckinger.
Thank you, everybody.